So in the previous year, we just barely began to discuss the sugya of Edom Zomim. So let's just recap where we're up to. That the Braisa had mentioned a whole series of additional mazikin, actually multiple Braisas had listed different listings of different mazikin, and one of them on the list was Edom Zomim. And the question that the Rishon begin to deal with is that Edom Zomim doesn't seem to fit the regular model of a mazik. In Zomim, meaning that two Edom testify that Reuven broke Shimon's window, and Bezin listens to the story, they sounds like the story is true, they're going with the din, they paskin based on the story of the Edom, and then a few minutes later, two other Edom walk in and say, Imanu HaYisab, how in the world could you have testified about that story where you claim that you were, at that time, you were with us, somewhere totally different, you weren't in New York at 3 o'clock, you were in California at 3 o'clock on that day, and therefore Imanu HaYisab. Now notice that the second set of Edom, not questioning the truth of the story. It is very possible that Reuven did break Shimon's window. But what the second set of Edom is saying is that there's no way in the world you could have known that because of those two magic words, Imanu HaYisab. So that is Edom Zomim. And Al Zeh Ne'emar B'Torah, V'asisem lo kasher Zomim la'asos li'achiv. The Edom who are found guilty of lying have to be punished, and they are punished to the same degree that they wanted to obligate the person themselves. So if they testify that he owes $1,000, they have to pay $1,000. If they testify that he's chayav misa, then they're going to be killed as well. So that's the parasha of Edom Zomim, kasher Zomim, lasos li'achiv. So the problem that the Rishonim are bothered with is that why exactly is that a mazik? Mazik means that I broke your window, so I caused you a hefsed mamon, so now I have to pay for that hefsed mamon. Or I broke your arm, I caused you X, Y, and Z, now I have to pay for that. In the case of Edom Zomim, I didn't cause anything. Nothing happened. No money ever changed any hands. So true, I did a terrible avera. I testified falsely and based it. I tried. I tried very, very hard to make you pay money. But at the end of the day, I didn't really make you pay any money. So why is that called Edom Zomim? Why is it called the Mazik? Unless one wants to argue that maybe we only gave half of the Edom Zomim cases. We described the case where Beis Din had been gomer the din. Beis Din had concluded that Reuven has to pay the $1,000, and Reuven's writing a check and he's about to pay the money, and then the Edom HaMazimin, the second set of Edom, come running in. Maybe that's true. That is a case of Edom Zomim, but maybe there's another case of Edom Zomim. Maybe there's an additional case of Edom Zomim where the person actually did write the check. The person actually did pay the money, and then the Edom HaMazimin come running in. Maybe that's also Edom Zomim. Now, if that's Edom Zomim, I said with a very, very big if that's Edom Zomim, so then at least we can begin to understand why it's in the parasha of Mazik. Because then the Edom Zomim did cause a loss of money. They caused money to be transferred, shalok it in. So then we can begin to understand why that's labeled as a Mazik. So we have a very serious question. The answer, is that Edom Zomim or is that not Edom Zomim? If the answer is yes, that's also called Edom Zomim, so then at least we can understand the Braisa. If the answer is no, then we're back to the drawing board. So that's really where our sugya begins. That's the name of the sugya, kasher Zomim v'lo kasher Asa. Now, those words, kasher Zomim v'lo kasher Asa, if you would just see those words, they almost give off the connotation that Edom Zomim are only called Edom Zomim if they tried, if they attempted to make somebody, that's what the Zomim means, to try, to attempt. In contrast to if they actually succeeded. So just from the name of the sugya itself, it sounds like there is no din of Edom Zomim if they actually succeeded. Now, hopefully by the time we finish the sugya, we'll realize that those magic words, kasher Zomim v'lo kasher Asa, that probably anyone who ever learned Machlas Tabeis has been grown up since they were 5 years old with those words, kasher Zomim v'lo kasher Asa. I don't want to sound the kfira. They don't appear in Chazal, to the best of my knowledge, anywhere. There is no such phrase in Chazal, kasher Zomim v'lo kasher Asa. It's a Rashi, that I'll admit to you, it's a Rashi in Chumash, and it's a Rashi in Maseches Machos. It's a Rashi paraphrasing certain concepts that appear in Maseches Machos, but there is no such phrase per se called kasher Zomim v'lo kasher Asa. So really it behooves us to learn the sugya from the beginning and try to see how this plays out. This basic question about Edom Zomim, does Edom Zomim apply only for effort, or does it apply for success as well? And then how that impacts further back on our sugya. So the sugya actually begins, for our purposes, on the second of the Ma'amar Kamos, with a Mishnah in Maseches Makos, Daf Hamad Beis. It's a very strange Mishnah, because the Mishnah presents a machlokes, and even the word machlokes here has to be taken with a grain of salt, a disagreement, we'll call it, because machlokes conjures up a much holier type of an argument, a disagreement between the Purushim and the Tzdukim. Now, the Tzedukim, for the record, were not a legitimate Torah opinion. This is not like Chalil v'Chalil v'Chalikis b'Sham b'Silel. Machlokes Pushim and the Tzedukim is tantamount, I don't want to give any real examples today, but tantamount is saying a machlokes between those who believed in Torah and those who were apikorsim, those who were kofrim. The Tzedukim were the kofrim in the Torah Shemapah. So any position that they're going to take is obviously not a legitimate halachic one. So every once in a while, the Mishnah, the Brais, and the Gemara will quote the views of the Tzedukim, not because we want to give any degree of legitimacy to them, but rather we're going to use it almost as an argument point. Namely, we're going to show that the Purushim, the Tamil Chachamim, disagreed with the Tzedukim for the following reason. And of course, we're obviously much more interested in understanding what we hold rather than what the Kofrim held. But you have to understand the Kofrim's position also in order to understand why, in fact, it's wrong. You know, they say that in today's world, there are no kofrim, there are apikorsim. There are a lot of amaratzim, but not too many kofrim. In order to be an apikors, you have to be a good brent apikors. You have to first know how to learn in order to become a real bona fide apikors. So comes the Mishnah and says, Eina Edim Zomen Neragin Achi Yigomer Hadin. That Edim Zomen are not punished. And here the Mishnah is talking about the ultimate punishment of Mises Beis Din. That if two Edim testify that Reuven killed Shimon, so when we apply the rule of Kasha Zamam, we should kill the Edim. Says the Mishnah, not so simple. The Edim are not killed, Achi Gomer Adin, unless they had succeeded to such an extent that there was already a Gomer Adin. Beis Din had already concluded that, yes, it's true, Reuven did kill Shimon, and Reuven is Chayav Misa. If at that point, after Gomer Adin, then and only then are the Edim subject to the punishment of Edim Zomen. In contrast to, if two Edim come to Beis Din and they say, Reuven killed Shimon, and the Beis Din is discussing and deliberating on it, they're sitting around interrogating the Edim, and then all of a sudden, Immanuel Yisrael, then two Edim come in, since there was not yet a Gemar Din, so then there's not going to be the parish of Kasha Zomen. So that's a given, the Mishnah says. And now the Mishnah tells us, Shaharei HaTzedukin Omrim, because the Tzedukim used to go much further than that. The Tzedukim used to say, Ad Sheyahoreg. Tzedukim used to say that it's not enough that there should be a Gemar Din, but rather it has to be that the Edom was successful. The only time that Edom Zomen applies is only if the Nidon of the person who they testified against actually was found guilty and actually subject to punishment. So if and when, according to the Tzedukim's mistaken view, if and when the Beis Din succeeded in its entirety and they actually put the person to death, then the Din of Edom Zomen kicks in. That was the Tzedukim's view. And the Purushim, the Torah Shabbat, says that that's clearly incorrect. What were the Tzedukim basing themselves on? Shenema nefesh tachas nefesh. They were basing themselves on the phrase nefesh tachas nefesh. Now, that phrase, nefesh tachas, doesn't really appear. The real words are nefesh b'nefesh. That's the phrase that appears in the Pasuk Chumash. And in the Girsa, in the Gemara, so it's already corrected, that the phrase is really nefesh b'nefesh. So the phrase nefesh b'nefesh that appears in the parish of Edom Zomen, that was the source for the Tzedukim's mistaken notion that Edom Zomen only applies after you have not just Nigmar Din, but you actually have the punishment that was meted out. That was the derivation for the phrase Nefesh B'Nefesh. I don't think that our friends at Nefesh B'Nefesh had that in mind when they coined their organization. They weren't following the Tzedukim's interpretation of Edom Zomen. But that is the only time Nefesh B'Nefesh appears in Chazal. So Amar Lahem Chachamim. So the Chachamim responded back to the Tzedukim, and they said, no, how can you say such a thing? Ha'lo kvar ne'mar v'asisim lo kashe zomam l'asas li'ochiv. It already says in the Chumash also, Kasha Zomam Lasos the Achiv for Achiv Kayim. The word Achiv has a certain connotation to it. The word Achiv seems to imply that he's still around. He's still a brother. He's still walking around. He's still alive. So the very phrase Achiv disproves your claim that the only time Edom Zomen applies is after Misas HaNidon. So Chazal, the Purushim, the Chachamim, the Maminim, they responded back to the Apikorsim, to the Tzedukim, and they said, you're telling us a Shtichel Torah from the Pasuk Nefesh B'Nefesh that Edom Zomen only applies after the death. Not true. The word Achiv disproves you. So now the Chachamim have to, in a sense, respond to the Tzedukim's claim and explain, so what does the phrase nefesh b'nefesh mean? So if imkein lama neva nefesh tachas nefesh, why does it say nefesh b'nefesh? So nefesh b'nefesh teaches me, yachol mishah shekiblu edusa nyehargu, I might think that at the moment that the Edim testified, their witness, their testimony was accepted. Now they're subject to the parasha Ben Mizomen. I might think you don't even need Nigmar Hadin, Tavad Lama, Nefesh Ben Nefesh, Ha'en and Erag and Hashi Gomer Hadin. So the phrase Nefesh Ben Nefesh means that the case is done, the case is complete. But complete doesn't mean the person was actually killed. Complete means that he reached the point of Nigmar Hadin. Now, how could we say with a straight face that's called Nefesh Ben Nefesh? Unless he wasn't killed yet. So the answer is that once we have Nigmar Hadin, there is a halachic concept called Agavra Katila. Once based in Paskins, Reuven is Chayav Mises based it. Even though Reuven's not going to get killed for a couple of hours, if somebody would actually go ahead and kill Reuven at that point, they would be Potter for Mises based it. Because the person is dead. Afi Allah Zayn Ladobim is considered to be already like a Gavra Ketila. So that's what the Prushim responded back to the Tzdukim, that on the one hand, the Torah says Nefesh Ben Nefesh. So in a sense, in a certain limited sense, you're right, that the case has to be complete in order for Adam Zoman to kick in. But complete doesn't mean the punishment administered, complete means an Igmar Din is reached. The real pasuk that's really carrying the day is the pasuk of Achiv, because Achiv has the connotation, Vare Achiv Kayim. So that's the real, that's the emissary source, at least from just reading this Mishnah, that's the true source for the Din, that what we call Chashazov Lo Chashin Asa, the real source is from the magic word Achiv, since the brother is still around. That implies that if the brother was already killed, then the whole Parsha Ben Zomen doesn't apply. So comes the Ritva, the third of the Mermakamos, and questions the Prushim, and says that, you know, the Prushim were trying to sell the Ishtabal Torah to the Tzdukim, and they did such a good job, says the Ritva. It's a very, very big question what the Prushim said. So if you take a look at the Ritva, the third of the Mermakamos, so he quotes the Mishnah in the second line. So he says, Lav de nafka lo b'nechsev l'achiv, says the Ritva, this is not a really good drasha. The word achiv does not really have that connotation that the brother's alive as much as the prushim sounded like. Why? Davade shapim mikrei achiv afili achamisa, says the Ritval. I think it's on a tour through Tanakh and show you that the word achiv, the word brother, refers very much to a no longer alive brother. Uchidichsiv lahakim laachiv shem biyisrael. Pasuk by Yibum. Pasuk says that when the brother dies, so the brother who's alive is supposed to do Yibum. L'hakim l'achiv shem Yisrael. What do you mean l'achiv? He's dead already. How is he called a brother? The answer is he's called a brother. Even though he's no longer alive, he's still called a brother. Uchsiv, in case that pasuk's not enough for you. Kirvus u'es achechem, by the death of Nadav and Avihu, so they are instructed, the cousins are instructed, es achichem, he's called an ach, he's called a brother. So a brother after death, he's not called a brother. So says the Ritva that over Gemara and Afkalon, the Hargo Ein Erogin, Elman of Sivkash Azam Ve'Elon Shem Menadin. The Ritva makes reference to the Gemara that we didn't finish up the Mar Machom number 2 yet, but the Ritva says if you look at the Gemara itself, the Gemara has a totally different source for the din that if the person is already killed, the Parasha Ben Mizomen doesn't apply. Avam the Achiv Lo Afkalon Midei says the Ritva that the word Achiv itself is not really going to do the trick. So according to the Ritva, why did the Prushim say it? For if it wasn't, quote-unquote, really true? So the answer is obvious. This was not Prushim. These are not Chachamim speaking as a source. These are the Chachamim negating the argument of the Tzdukim. Remember the historical context of the Machlokes, the Prushim and the Tzdukim was, the Tzdukim presented their apikorsis. So the Chachamim were trying to win the debate. So they tried to keep them quiet. So they bring in an argument for polemics just to say, oh, and by the way, no, you're wrong because of the word achiv, hoping and praying that no one's going to question them. Because even though in their heart of hearts, this is not the source, this is not a chazal saying, menani mili, how do you know the following din? These are the prushim for the purpose of argumentation, for debate, just to quiet down the tzdukim. But the emes la'amita, what's the real emes, the source for this din? So the Ritva says, you got to look at the Gemara to find out what the real source for the din is. But let's just, before we go back to what the Gemara says, to what the supposedly real source is, let's just go back to the Ritva's disagreement with the source that the Mishnah presents. If you read the Mishnah Kipshuto, it appears that the Mishnah is really telling you the source. The Mishnah's not telling you a game, not telling you a debate, it's not telling you polemics. The Mishnah is telling you the real emissary source for the din is the magic word achiv. And the Ritva says it's wrong. It's contradicted by multiple times in Tanakh where the word achiv refers to somebody who is no longer alive. So comes the Rashash in Maseches Sanhedrin and says the answer is very simple. One could disagree with all the Ritva's psukim. One could argue with all the Ritva's proofs. One very, very fell swoop. Says the Rashash, a brisk of art, there are two dinim, there are two kind of brothers in halacha. There are biological brothers, and there are halachic brothers. biological brothers means two brothers from the same parents. Those are biological brothers. Those brothers, they remain brothers even after death. Even though Nebuchadnezzar person died, they're still brothers. And therefore the Torah says that the lachim lachim shame, therefore the Torah says susa cheichem. The Torah says if a person dies, a brother is younger, his brother. He's called his brother, they're brothers. The ties of family still remain even after death. However, when we speak about Klal Yisrael, kulanu achim, achim anachnu, we're brothers. What does that mean? What makes us brothers? I'm not a cousin, not a brother. What makes me a brother with you? So the answer is that what Chazal described, achim b'mitzvos, that we have a certain common culture, common goals. We have things we do together. We do mitzvahs together. So achim achim anachnu. So achim hu b'mitzvos, says the Rashash. But everyone's alive. When everyone's doing the same thing, we're all acting together, we're all working together, we're all doing mitzvahs together, we're all counting the same minyan together, we're all keeping Shabbos together. That's achim b'mitzvahs. When somebody's dead already, so he's not achim b'mitzvahs. So biological achi still is, achim b'mitzvahs he's not. All the psukim that the Ritva is referring to, just by golly, are all talking about biological brothers. They're all talking about Yibum and Suasachechem, all the psukim are referring to biological brothers. So then, rightfully so, the psukim refer to brothers even after death. But the halachic brother, the definition of a brother in the sense of Pashem Edim Zomen, there the opposite is true, says the Rashash. That pasuk is not referring to a biological brother. It cannot even be referring to a biological brother because a biological brother can't testify for you or against you. He's possibly Eidus. So obviously, Kashazam Lassus, the Achiv is referring to a Jewish brother, to a general statement, not a biological brother. So Al Zeh Nemar, Arecha Kayim. If he's alive and well, then he's your brother. If he's dead already, then he's not going to be your brother. He's not doing mitzvahs anymore. So therefore, he's not your brother anymore. So whereas the Ritva completely rejected the source, so to speak, that the Mishnah gives us. The Rashash says, no, we can bring that source, no pun intended, bring that source back to life. The source is really not so off. The source really is a potentially valid source. But let's go back into the eyes of the Ritva for a moment, that there really is no source. The source that the Mishnah tells us is not really an accurate source, halachically. So what is the source? How do we know this din? Every kid ever opened up Makas Abeis knows that the halacha is that if the Edom succeeded in what they did, then all bets are off. Then they're not punished. Quote unquote, kashas avlo kashas also. Vishtay, what's the source for it? If the Mishnah source is not accurate, what is a possible source? So the Ritva references back to the second of the Maamar Kopos again. So back to where we started, back to the Sugyan Makas Tav Hamid Beis. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Tana. Tana Beribi Oimer. Beribi was a title that was used to describe a great Tana, like the Grand Rabbi Beribi. So this particular Rav, who was the author of this Braisa, had the following statement: Tana Beribi Oimer, Lo Hargu Neharagin. If the Edim did not succeed in killing the person, they merely attained Gemar Din. Then Neharagin. Then the Din is that the Edim are killed, they're punished. But Hargu Ein Neharagin. But if they killed the person already, they already succeeded, then they get off scot-free. Now again, obviously it doesn't mean in Shemayim they can get off scot-free. The Ramban al Torah explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many, many cheshbonos as to how to punish these Edom who committed such a much more horrible crime, because not only did they testify falsely, they actually succeeded in killing the person. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will settle the score with them, that's no question. But in Beis and Shalmata, the din is that lo hargu ne'erugin, hargu ein ne'erugin. So Amar Aviv, so the father of this Tana was asked the son of Kasha. The son's saying Shtikul Torah, the son's writing a Braisa, and the father's sitting in the back of the Mishnah. Raise my hand, let me ask a question. So he says, Amar Aviv Bni, Lav Kavachimer. He said, isn't it a Kavachimer? How could you say what you said? How could you tell me the Shtikul Torah, my son, that if they didn't kill the Chayav Misa, if they did kill or not, Kavachoyma, Maduch, if they didn't succeed, they're punished so terribly. Kavachoyma, they did succeed. So Amalo, he responded back, Limaditana Rabbeinu, She'enon Shimin Hadin. That no, we have learned that when it comes to Kavachoymers, the buck stops here, you can't punish somebody based on a Kavachoymer. Ain onshim and adin. This is a throwback to what we spoke about way, way back at the base, the very, very first week, back in August when it was warm. So we started the shiur. The very, very first thing we learned was ain onshim and adin, as it appears in the Din of Mamonis. So this is ain onshim and adin of Fashos. But the Gemara says that you can't punish somebody based on a kavachimer. So you're right, it makes a lot of sense. It's very logical. Logic dictates that we should have killed the Edom Zomen in the case where they succeeded. But logic doesn't always prevail. The din is, ain't own shimin hadin. How do you know that this principle is true? Ain't own shimin hadin? So the Gemara gives you the following source, the sign, we learned in the Braisa. Isha sheyikach hasachoso, bas aviv o bas imo. The Torah says that if a person is mezana with his sister, so he's going to be chayav, kareis, malchus, and all the punishments for gilya rayos. And the Torah describes, isha sheyikach hasachoso, bas aviv o bas imo. So the Torah speaks about two kinds of sisters. A half-sister through the father, or a half-sister through the mother. Either one, Yechayev curries for. So someone can come up with a shtickle Torah. Ein li ala bas aviv shaloi bas imo. U bas imo shaloi bas aviv. So maybe the Torah only said, I can't marry my half-sister. Maybe I can marry my full-sister. So a shtickle Torah. Bas aviv bas imo minayin. How do you know that even bas aviv u bas imo is also included? Talmud loma erbas echoso gila. There is a separate, special pasuk to teach me that. The Rebbeinu Shlomo went out of his way, so to speak, to write an extra couple of words in the Chumash to offset that seemingly ridiculous avamina. Well, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote a pasuk in the Chumash to offset it, that's not as ridiculous as we thought it was. So he asked the Gemara, what do you mean it is ridiculous? Actually, layama yeshli bedin. What do I need a pasuk to tell me that you can't marry your full sister? How would you ever have explained such a thing logically? Im ana shabas aviv shloi bas imo, bas imo shloi bas aviv, bas aviv bas imo l'kol shegein. Isn't it an obvious kavachomer? Madach, you can't marry a half-sister. Kavachomer, you can't marry a full-sister. So why did the Rebbeinu Shlomo even bother to write that pasuk to tell me that? Anybody could have figured it out logically. The answer is, ha'lamadata she'ein ein shimin hadin. Because when it comes to onshim, when it comes to punishments, there's no chachmas, there's no lamdus, there's no kavachomers. It has to state beferish. If it doesn't say beferish, you have no right to include based on kal v'chomers. This is the source for the principle of Shabbat Din. From the fact that the Torah went out of its way to add those seemingly superfluous words, Erva Sechaisa Gila, to teach me that you're not allowed to marry your full-fledged sister, that pasuk, that phrase, teaches me that logic fails us. Kal v'chomers fail us because ain't Ein Shabbat Din.
So, couldn't give that answer to the Tzedukim because they don't hold by
they don't hold by that
Rabbanan. So
yeah,
they had to give a different answer.
He had to give an answer to Tosh Mechsav, so to speak.
Right.
Even though it was wrong, the Ritva says, but he was hoping they wouldn't catch him on it. So comes the Ritva and says, I'll tell you what the real source for the din, quote unquote, Kashazav lo kasher asa is. The real source, what the Gemara says, is Eino Ein Shimin HaDin. That in Ochanami, there is no pasuk that says fakir. There's no pasuk, no drush that tells me that if the Edom succeeded, you can't punish them. But the pasuk does describe Zomam. And Zomam has a certain connotation. You want to have a kavachayim because of the hate. Except for there's a problem. Eino Ein Shimin HaDin. So we now have two different sources for the same halacha. Everybody short of the Tzedukim agrees that the din is Hargu Ein Harug. And that's what the Mishnah says. Hargu Ein Harug. If the Edom are successful, then in fact they are not killed. But how do we know that to be so? So according to the way the Mishnah presents it, it's based on the magic word L'Achiv, because the connotation of the word Achiv is already Achiv Kayim. So that Pasuk may or may not be the real source, depending on the Ritva and the Rashash. And then we have the second source that appears in the Brice and the Gemara of Einon Shemin Adin. So comes the Ritva back for the Sugya and says, you know what? Maybe there's a third source. Maybe it's interesting because the Ritva got rid of the source that appears in the Mishnah, and now he's questioning the source that appears in the Gemara. Every source Chazal gives the Ritva saying, well, that source is not as good as you think it is. I got a better one. So comes the Ritva, very, very it's an interesting Ritva. So the Ritva, the fourth of the Mamakamos, says as follows. Yeshe Pirshu, the Rebbe l'chedude l'brei hudika amalei, says this whole discussion that's going on in the Gemara about what the source is, and the father and the son, says they were just, you know, trying to sharpen his son a little bit, trying to get him to think a little bit. He was hacking him, the father. You get the impression from the sugya, from the braisa, that the son's the great Talmid Chacham, and the father's the one sitting in the back, you know, timidly asking a question, you know, my dear son, right? So the response, that's not exactly what happens. The father was the real, he was the established Talmid Chacham. He was getting his anachas from his young son rabbi. He was saying his first Shia Klali. You know, he just pointed him as a Rebbe in the Shiva. He's saying a Shia. And the father's trying to get the kid to think a little bit, try to get him, you know, get sharpen up his skills a little bit. So what does the Rishva mean by that? He says, the Vaaday, I feel the man, the Yom Bi'ama, ownship in Adin, Kedis Masechas Adin, Baha ain't ownership. Says the Ritva, by the way, this principle of ain't ownership Adin, it's true. We accept this Din without any question, ain't ownership Adin. That's what we pass in Halacha. But says the Ritva, there is a dissenting view. There's one Tana who says that ownership in Adin has a different way of understanding those Pesukim. So according to that Tana, we're back to square one. What would the source for the Din be? So this is the Ritva Shita. So first he knocked out the Pasuk L'Achiv because he said, that's not really correct. The sources in Tanakh don't bear that out. It was just for debate purposes. Now you have the Braisa that says, in Onshim and Adin, the Ritva says, that's great, according to some, but there's got to be another. So somewhere in between the lines, there has to be another source for this principle. Everybody agrees to this principle, short of the Tzedukim, so we have to find the source. So notice, we're now up to our third source for the same din, and so far we still haven't seen the words Kashazom, we're not going to see them yet. We're not going to see them at least till Thursday. Kashazom v'lo Kashasa. So we're still searching for sources. Now again, let's just put everything back into perspective. The reason why we're so looking for sources, why we're so looking for this din, for the truth of this din, is because we're learning about Vakama Daf Dalet. This is going to impact an Abraisa, because Abraisa lists Edom Zomen as a Mazik. And we were very disturbed with that, because Edom Zomen is not really a Mazik. If you didn't do anything, if you didn't succeed in anything, what makes you into a Mazik? So we're trying to understand, is it true, is it not true? So we keep on seeing the same din presented, Hargu and Arug, which seems to strengthen that question. But we're chiseling away at that din, because we still haven't found an absolute ironclad source for that din. We thought we had a Mishnah, the Ritva says that, and the Mishnah didn't really mean it. We thought we had a Gemara Brice that drew, not so low pashut. So we're still searching for multiple sources. So the Ritva is going to come up with a brand new source for this din, and even by the time the Ritva source is complete, we're still going to be in the dark. We're still not going to be sure how to apply this back to that sugya. So our end goal is to get back to Bava Kama Daf Dalet, but we still got to have a lot of work to do in Makas Daf Hei to try to find four or five different possible sources for this din. Because once we identify the correct source, then we'll be able to make the jump and say, well, does that discussion apply to Dinim Mamanus, or is it something that's limited to Dinim Nefashos? And that may make all the difference in the world. So our goal is to first find the source, second to see how it plays out in terms of Mamanus, and hopefully make the complete circle back to our sugya. Hopefully that's shipped on Thursday, so we'll continue the next Shia, we'll continue this.